Blog Talk Radio.
Doing a special broadcast here during the Black History Showcase. My name is Kathy Santos for Women Veterans Speak. And we're going to be talking to various individuals who come to our resource table where we are displaying our regular exhibit here at the Philadelphia Convention Center doing Black History Showcase. This is an event sponsored by Mr. Everett Staton, and we're just so delighted that he remembers to contact us when he puts this form on. They interrupted a little bit doing some renovations to the Philadelphia Convention Center, but there are several rooms of activity here, with the military room being one where I am representing the National Alliance of Women Veterans, of which I am the founder. Along with me here today, I have Mr. Cornell Brown, and we're expecting some other women veterans to come and share with us. So I'm just going to interrupt this broadcast for just a moment so that we can just settle down a little bit and arrange a few things before we actually start to speak to some of our guests. And just stay with us, and we'll be right with you. Thank you so much. Stay with us.
Thank you so much for joining us. We are here at the Philadelphia Convention Center at the Black History Showcase, and we are about to interview several of our guests here who lined up to sit with us over the next couple of hours. So just stay with us, and we're talking to with the Tuskegee Airmen who are a little ways over from us, and this is the Philadelphia chapter. These are well-established, so the Tuskegee Airmen, many of them who are the original Tuskegee Airmen. So we will have a couple of them talk to us. We have some reenactors over in our left corner who are right now engaging some of their guests who are at the resource table. So we may be talking to some of them if they get a chance later on today. But right now I have Mr. Cornell Brown, who has joined us here at the Convention Center, and see if he'll like to engage us on his experience here. I think you were here last year. Is that correct, Mr. Brown?
That is correct.
So tell me, how have you enjoyed the Black History Showcase? What exactly does that translate to you in terms of recreation or activities? How do you relate to the Black History Showcase?
Well, I enjoy it tremendously, and it's more of educational than recreational. I can see our history from our perspective, presentation of our history. And it's a learning experience. There's numerous seminars concerning our history, our true history, who we are, where we come from, and our plight and our direction and our destiny. And it's just a glorious thing to see our people enjoying our history. And I'm not putting down anybody else's history. But for many years, we were denied our history and knowledge of our history, and inventors and authors and doctors and who have made worldwide contributions to the human family, and just to celebrate them is wonderful.
Well, I'm glad to hear that because, you know, we share in so many different things of our American history in terms of inventors. We have, in one of the other rooms, we have books, all these different highlights being featured here at this event. And it's just incredible the different levels of achievement that many African Americans have had across the board, actually.
And these achievements have come at a time where we have struggled as a people during slavery, Reconstruction, post-Reconstruction, and before then. We have been on the world stage. We come from civilization. And our ancestors and their contribution to the world stage. So it's been a marvelous time.
Thank you so much for those comments, Mr. Brown. We are just, we have now another one of our women veterans, a regular host, a co-host with us here on our Women Veterans Speak, our regular weekly program. So we're just glad and hopeful that you join us and is ready to talk, because we have so many things that we'd like to talk about today with her, just sharing a little bit about her of the creative artwork that she shared with us, from what she was able to translate from her thoughts and experience while serving in combat. So these are some of the things that we're able to visualize right now. But there are several different extreme graphic and descriptive drawings that we were able to experience some of the behind the scenes, and it's just a beautiful depiction from someone who's actually right there and able to translate what they're thinking and what they're feeling about the experience on these beautiful drawings. So we are hopeful that we'll be able to experience more from her view, from her perspective in these drawings over time as we continue to provide these platforms of, I guess, looking inside the souls of some of the veteran women. And I think that's where we are right now. So I'd like to just welcome Black Hawk.
Hi, Debbie. How are you today?
And how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
So I'm just glad to have you with us today. We are live already for the past 15 minutes. I've had to take a couple of breaks already because I had to try to reorganize. But I'd like to get the mic up to you right now to see if there's anything you'd like to just share with us that's off the top or anything you prepared for us with your creative mind.
Yes, well, first and foremost, listeners, happy Easter. And as you are well aware that we do have a function scheduled for April 12th at 2011 from 1300 until 1500 hours at the VA Field Office Medical Center Chapel. And it is Women Veterans Pray. We're going to be honoring Reverend Bracey. And we're also going to have a little thing, nothing fancy, but just something. And I was asked to provide a poem. In that same vein, in the event that you cannot attend the event, which I pray that you do, I read out last night. It's called Once Upon a Time.
Would you be willing to share that with us?
It's still rough, so please bear with me. I haven't tweaked it quite yet accurately, but I'm just going to run this up your water cooler and let me know what you think. This is called Once Upon a Time. Once upon a time, I was an ordinary woman, young and grounded in my faith. I joined the military to serve my country and fought overseas duty with men to improve the lives of those great. I was so excited to be all I could be, I could hardly wait. I was naive because it never occurred to me I would wind up in a war. That experience destroyed my innocence. I was no longer ordinary due to violence. The blood on my hands, courtesy of the sand, threw my moral compass askew. I wondered how to allow the evil that men do. For a long time, I thought I'd never get it back after Kuwait and Iraq, until I remembered that story about footprints in the sand. All the times I should have, God was holding my hand. All those nights I screamed and cried, Yahweh gave me the ability to pray and cope what I had seen so I could live another day. So now I am an extraordinary woman, no longer ordinary like before. My God exists, and now I can prove it. I know his mercy and how he holds me always and loves me, courtesy of a war. I never said, I know my way.
Outstanding. And the creativity just flows so naturally. I wonder if I could just ask you a question. What generates these thoughts? Are you in any particular mode of thinking when your thoughts are able to flow and you can translate them from just writing?
Well,
I mean, for me, I get very emotional, and I'm not sure what's happening when you're able to write.
I'm the type of individual, like, this is the way that I a lot of people have a difficult time, and often I do as well, trying to translate things that they feel into a concept that can be understood by everybody else. Many times when we as veterans, disabled veterans, or veterans that have been traumatized, or anyone for that matter, anybody has seen something that has kind of, it's different from what they're used to being going through. The process that you must be able to dance or digest, but you must be able to compartmentalize, so to speak. So every result, when I see something that really makes me cry or want to pull my hair out, I sit there and I put it in a context that I can go ahead and adapt to, piece by piece. Because guess what? It's just like, remember back in the day when you had to go ahead and you had to eat your dinner? it didn't like Brussels sprouts. Guess what? God got a place in humor. He is not going to put anything on your plate that you cannot digest. He did not say you had to eat it all at once. He said take a little bite right now. Chew to swallow. Okay? Once you get done with that little piece on your plate, you can move on over here to the beach. You don't like beets? Guess what? You take a little bit of beets. You're to the beach with your mashed potatoes. And that's how to process things in a context not only that you can cope with adequately, but you can also help other people understand according to what you have been.
But listen, when I look at your drawing, I hear your poetry, I am brought to but I have learned how to absorb much of what you are saying, because I think it's an experience that needs to be said in terms of art and culture. And when I talk about talking about the military experience, that whoever looks at those pictures, they don't know whether you're actually drawing them out of just artistic experience or whether you're drawing them from because that's the art form is, but because I know they're coming from you, it evokes for me such strong emotion. And then now to sit here and have you share your innermost feelings, I always think that art is an expression of something going on in the soul that only you know, and when you share it with others, it's so special. And, you know, that's why art, I think, is an acquired type of taste, and most people who can really appreciate when someone takes the time to share their inner feelings or their inner emotions, and this on paper, in writing. Writing for me is my expression. I've always liked to write, if we could talk about that. I mean, I've always been able to try to be as descriptive as possible, but I've heard that people try to can really get into my mind from my writing, and it's because I think when I was very young, I was always told, I was from down south, and you spoke, you're seen and not heard.
Right.
And from there, I began to withdraw from speaking but writing.
Mm-hmm.
And now, for me, I think it's just a natural instinct. When I have something to say, I'll write it before I'll say it in most cases. And I think it's a wonderful way of expression. And I'm so excited about May 12th. I was able to share with our two leaders who just passed the table about the experience that they had recently. They watched a play or a show where Halle Berry was in a movie called For Love of Liberty. And it was on PBS, and it was several different wars that transcended women veteran stories. And I don't know if you've seen that, but I'm going to look this on PBS to see if I can get a copy of that. But I will tell you on the play Shot Away that we had the fortunate opportunity to go to New York to see last week, we did receive the script to that.
Oh, excellent.
Received the script to that. I'm only going to show it because it is quite graphic and quite descriptive. And that, too, is like, oh, my God. So I talked to Donna through email today because I told her how I valued her sharing with me a script. I mean, it was a two-week sold-out project. And the night that I went, I mean, it's the best acting. It's the best acting that you never heard of. They're actors and real actresses, but I mean, you talk about some good acting. Would you comment on that, Mr. Brown?
Well, it was a play. It was a phenomenal play. And they gave you the feel of the military, not the play. From the beginning of the play to the end of the play. And it gave you the plight of the women and men who went through sexual trauma. And it was an excellent play. It should have been on Broadway. The nation should see this play. It was done. It was real professional.
But the one thing, when Donna shared with me late earlier today, she told me, I thought to protect the play and to guard the play because, I mean, a playwright should be copyrighted, you would think, in a traditional sense, and have all the rights that it deserves, residuals and royalties, whatever it deserves, to come back to the. But she, in her generosity, said all she wants to happen, she's a woman veteran, and what she wanted to happen was that we spread it around. spread it around. I want to get your comments on that. Of course, we are, you know, we give the FCC and those different restrictions, and but let me hear your comments on that. I mean, have not even seen the play. The play is I think it's got national attention already, because actually I got some feedback from California.
Cap, you know, if I may interject, for where I write politically and I draw many pictures, and often been asked, exactly as I'm sitting here today, about why don't you have a copyright lawyer? Why don't you have this? Why don't you have this? One thing that people fail to realize is the following. Anytime someone is under the impression they have to manage or have an agent or market what they're trying to convey, if the perception is that you are doing it for a profit, you are a nonprofit organization. If the things that are going on in the organization, the experiences that we have survived, are relevant, and we will not be bribed, we will not be compromised, and we will not be put in a predicament where it is assumed that we are marketing a tragedy. What we want to do is have free expression of speech in this regard, about legislation, about information getting out, about our very dirty little secret that is an elephant in the room. And the day that we understand these things, the day that we understand we will not be bribed to tell the truth, is sooner that these things will when they should.
And this is true, true somebody who recognizes the true value of their mission, in that their experience is not for sale. I oftentimes challenge individuals are the motive of some people who are benefiting financially, who are not of our community, who really do not sympathize with us. But it's so important that we as veterans understand that ourselves. The one thing that I know is that we are becoming commodities in many cases, and we're signing our names on lists. We're signing our names on lists at various events that we've been invited to, not knowing that those lists are being sold. And we're being put in programs, and it's really a very sad thing that at the suffering, and in many cases, these women who are signing on to these various programs are victims unbeknownst to them.
They're being prostituted courtesy of what has happened.
And what are some of your feelings about that? Why do you talk about that? But for me, I'm bothered by it, and I'm hurt because I, too, covered that for several years before my eyes were open. And we have a guest here. I'm going to ask her to join us in a few minutes. We're doing a live radio broadcast. I ask that you join us in a couple of minutes. Sergeant Lee. We have sergeants and reenactors here. So we've been here for a couple of years together, but, you know, I still don't know their rank. Just yet. But Sergeant Lee is going to come and join us, and he's being a reenactor. And are you going to be available to come back and join us in a little bit? But we're going to ask you to come and sit here and share some of your experiences here at the Black History Showcase. We're doing a 2-hour live broadcast to our internet audience.
You can be.
Thank you so much, Sergeant Lee. Sergeant Lee is of the Civil War, and he's doing his enactment. But just to get back on the subject about how the manipulation and, to some degree, humiliation, when I see, having learned what happened to me over a 10-year period, going to the VA and just being manipulated, and my eyes were opened when I began to question what looked like to me. If you go into a health environment, you would expect there to be some positiveness or some increase to your health concerns. Or at least you would know what your prognosis and your plan of recovery was. But you go into the VA, and I'm listening to other veterans, and I'm trying to make some sense of it after about 10 years. And my questions were not necessarily answers, but it opened up some other dialogue that I began to be curious. And for the past 5 or 6 years, I have questioned the motive and the agenda of some of the medical professionals and their treatment strategies, that too many women veterans, too many are not being whole. So I'm going to just open up the floor again to our guests, and we maybe can change the subject just a little bit. Now, why don't we talk about May 12th event, you announced it early on, but the May 12th event, when I what raised my awareness is that was the letter that you wrote to God and the discussion that we had about the role of the chaplain. I went to church this morning, and for me, that my spirituality is so important. And I can appreciate when I have a pastor or a spiritual leader where I do attend church that can understand that the veterans have a unique experience and it's not necessarily one that you would teach traditionally in terms of just and I would seek, for me, some privacy and trust in that what I'm saying or the opportunity to speak with them is taken very seriously and that our conversations are confidential. So in doing that, I realized that had not happened to me after seeking several conversations and dialogue with several pastors over the years. And I think that one of the main understandings is they didn't understand. They didn't understand their role as a chaplain. They did not understand their role and what it meant to someone who had been isolated or alienated in a combat zone or in a military situation. So what I'm learning now from discussing this, that we need to open up the dialogue, and I was permitted to do so by talking to the chaplain at Philadelphia VA Hospital. And as I met some opposition, but I was adamant. I was determined that they were going to act in their roles. Now, the comment that I received on Friday, which was very interesting to me, when I talked to the chief chaplain, their comment was, quote, unquote, this is a facility that provides health care. And I'm going to allow our guests to comment on that comment, but I did want to share with what my response to that was. And I felt that if the recipient of the health care was not responding in a positive way historically, that the dialogue for the veterans or those people with whom these treatments are intended be at the table to talk about. Much of my experience with the Philadelphia VA has been kind of dictator. You take this pill, you do this, and it's been reactionary. But I became real proactive when I went to school and I learned a little bit about some of these different research and experiment type that veterans were succumbing to, and they had no knowledge of it. And it's a frightening experience. And I think I was able to engage our public affairs division at the VA of that by suggesting to them this was not the desire to have this event was not about me. It was about the role of the chaplain not being recognizably accessible or available, and we need to get some definitive answers to those who are coming to me and saying, well, why can't we go to the chaplain? What is the problem? And so I think when you put the spotlight on somebody who has historically done things in a certain kind of way, whether it's systemic or whatever, we kind of put the light and we get, I think they feel a little bit defensive. So I was able to push into it and finally got the confirmation date on Friday, but I wasn't taking no for an answer. I think that I represent several veterans who are spiritual enough to know that if you have a leader who's identified as a one of spirituality, that they should be accessible because that's our first commission. Go ye therefore. I mean, the Bible says love one another. And I think that the least we can do is show in love to somebody who's actually been is trying to make contact. And I'm losing my chat. I'm trying to go because I'm trying not to say certain things.
Right now, what we're going to discuss this according to some strict protocol here, and many of you are broadcast will understand exactly the invisible ink, so to speak. One thing that we have found out when we are an endeavor about things of this nature, first and foremost, I am assistant to a certain extent, but I wasn't done. And the thing that happens is they send the movement chaplains back to the rear. They move them back to the rear because, first of all, non-combatants. Okay.
Yeah, right.
And
okay.
Second and foremost, dead men tell no tales. So what happens to us when we are in fear of some type of violence? And we feel morally, we feel it has caused us to destruct when it comes to our dead or level of faith, our beliefs. And the question you said, I spoke previously at home. These things shake us to our core. And not just us. It shakes everyone to their core that has seen something that would cause them to wonder. The one little question called why. The attempt is often done with people like us that have seen this type of violence, dead or blatant foul. To want to find counsel, to want to find some type of base to remind ourselves the reason why we put our hand on that Bible to sound for and defend the United States of America against these corporate and domestic, and obey the lawful orders of those put over us. So help us God. God. What often happens to us when we do see things that we know are not God's law or course and our course of duty, we are denied access to the only moral compass and guidance that we have to go ahead and stay on the track when we see something like that. More often than not, we are put on the spot. More often than not, we are asked to explain to our company commander. We are asked to explain to the chain of command why we want to go to see clergy. The opinion is the clergy is a whistleblower. Why are you going to tell God if you can't tell me? So the clergy that you have in a combat zone is so far removed from the actual action that you're lucky if they get run out of gas. And when you come back from that experience in that land of violence, and you attempt to reconcile your faith for having to change, the people that you have laid in place, your military, I say again, the military chaplain corporately and is constantly presented itself to be a system where, oh, you're a whistleblower. So the clergy, don't make it look bad. Don't make it look bad for the beat. Don't make it bad for the military. And a lot of them are boxed in to such an extent. You cannot have the Pharaoh say the first I'm going to be the truth detector.
Well, what is the role of the chaplain? What is he, a commissioned or is he non-commissioned?
Okay, the chaplain corps historic commissioned officers. Commissioned officers go to college, and guess who pays for that college? The United States government. So guess who holds your dog tags and your dag nabbit conviction in their hands? So you better be nice to Pharaoh when you're talking about Route 66. That means the Bible for you, civilian people. Because if you don't, you will be fired clean out your locker. But, of course, that is my own personal opinion, and I display the same sentiment of any other that is on this broadcast. But it's my personal experience that led me to that conclusion. Back to you, Kathy.
I have experience.
Can I go back to the chaplain piece?
Yes.
And you had mentioned that they told you that VA was for health care and a holistic approach. The chaplain would be a nice piece of that pie to help put people back together. So that is health care. I just wanted to interrupt. Yes.
But, you know, I had an experience. I met, we had a doctor there, Reverend, Dr. Raymond Coleman, Raymond Watson, about 2004. He was there 2 years. He started a program that he developed called the Psychosocial Approach to Behavior Health. And it was, and in that, part of that team was the Mental Health and Critical Care Management team, and they had a social environment where they would have picnics, they would go to the house, they would get into the people's lives. Now, for me, those are the questions because they dropped the ball. Actually, they terminated that whole program simply because it was working.
Exactly.
Because it was working. And I'm not
the reason why they terminated that program, and I cannot confirm, there's something called the experiences of said soldiers that were coming from a holistic approach. The clergy that were involved in the counseling were raising questions, and it came under the cloak of Homeland Security, Patriot Act. So for that chaplain to inquire about the distress of said petuant, all of a sudden, it was a risk of security issue.
that makes sense because that was right during the when they established the program OEF-OIS program manager right there. So all of these when you see things, I guess program started and abruptly stopped. It has some mandates that are coming from our federal level.
The problem is the truth is coming to light and it's coming out in a different avenue of a person cannot be managed by the Delta.
Well, you know, that's why I believe that our recent women's coordinator was so important to us living in the Philippines because she allowed public gatherings, or at least she allowed or gave the appearance. What I'm learning is that the recent women veterans group settings at the VA hospital that appear to be for the women veterans to gain access to information regarding various life skills or life activities, whether it's counseling or housing, it's going to be a domestic violence. My whole question is what these atmospheres are created really for, because when you sign your name on those lists, they're not being signed on by that department. The department that's sending the information down, the department that's sending or being signed registration is the coordinator department.
Inquiring minds, in my opinion, should want to know why. Any inference, any attempt to contact the chaplain for or any type of religious clergy is referred to under the auspice of a mental health issue and not a holistic care issue for the general well-being of the soldiers or the families that are in distress.
Could you clarify that just a little bit more?
My question is the following, once again, I shall rephrase. When the chaplain corps has been involved historically, including to the when we were even going to out of the way, I have personally to address this same issue about the general, the complete well-being of a wounded soldier, warrior, family member, into an auspice of the chaplaincy corps, civilian and military corps. We come under the umbrella of a mental health care issue as opposed to being a general holistic care issue to heal the entire human being. Okay, it's automatically assumed you must be crazy to talk to a chaplain. You're crazy because you want to pray after what you've been through. When in reality, what chaplains do is keep our moral compass straight and help us, by the grace of God, keep those weapons of mass destruction on safe.
Well, you know, those comments are valuable to me because I struggled with the dialogue that I had. We're going to take a short break right now and
I'm
We are having a little bit of technical difficulties right now, but we will be getting back to our program in just a moment. Back here right now. Got a little nervous. I get a little tongue-tied when I have my guest here with all this knowledge and just a brilliant mind articulating some of the issues, particularly those chaplaincy. And we're trying to get some of the guests who are here, Teacher Airmen, and they were just here. And we're going to try to get some of them to talk a little bit about what their experience being in such a unique historical group of men. The chapter of Philadelphia is very, very active. And I was just talking to one of the founding members, Julius Grant, who got a chance to meet Senator Obama prior to him becoming president during a special Senate reception. And he had Senator Obama's business card, which I thought was unique. I am a collector of business cards as well. However, I was not fortunate enough to get Senator Obama's business card when I met him back in 2006 before he became president. But it was an honor. I would like to talk more about the role of the chaplaincy, but I want to say something. We have the program tomorrow, and we'll have some of our special guests and our adopted co-host with us, because the knowledge is so important. To know at all about intersectional imagination. And when I actually was on the radio program that I was co-hosting for the past 4.5 years, which tradition I took, I was very much concerned about the information that was being put out at the time. And I did travel. I received firsthand information from those who were making decisions in Washington. I got a chance to go on the Senate floor into the Senate chambers to hear testimony about the war, particularly when there was an issue of the armored tanks, and that the this was right after Bob Woodruff's incident. He was the reporter who was in the tank and it in the incident. But we were just fortunate enough to have the support to get into the Senate chambers during John Kerry's testimony, and he was demanding that there be some response to the need that of veterans serving in harm's way. They were not being properly trained, which was one of the issues at the time, and they were not being properly trained when sent into combat areas. So we are glad that we do have somebody at the table. Now, Mr. Kerry, I don't know what his position is now on the women's veterans issues. I haven't heard him as being one of the trailblazers on that issue, but the recent legislation, I don't know if you're familiar H.R. Bill 809, but it was a bill that was put on the Congress floor back right during the end of the 111th Congress, which would have been right before the end of the year, and it was to provide in all facilities a display showing that the fundamental principles of women veterans and how they were to be treated in all VA hospitals. However, I think
Americans was bamboozled, because when Tammy was on Oprah Winfrey and she spoke about this legislation that preceded the Don't Ask, Don't Tell bill, and we thought when it had passed the Congress, we were assuming that it had passed. Because if you recall, by the end of that Congress, we knew there was a lined up, those Congress people would not be coming that back. However, the Senate was also lined up, and it never passed in the Senate, which meant that when the 112th Congress convened, it was like it never actually happened. It was almost like they have to reintroduce that bill and make any amendments, which I'm sure it would need now, because we were bamboozled, because they pushed the Don't Ask, Don't Tell through the Congress and Senate, and it was passed, and we have now Secretary Robert Gates, Secretary of Defense, Robert Gates, are pushing for the urgency and training certain military personnel on that culture, so that transition can somewhat happen over time. But I believe it will. The question was asked to me last night by the time I got home on what exactly that all meant. Now, there's going to be a forum coming up, and some of the issues that they were talking to me about last night was ROTC. And what is the data, ROTC and junior ROTC in terms of military sexual trauma? Now, my question was, what is the relevance of that? Because is that military? If you're serving, because the military, in my opinion, is once you served an oath, you actually in some type of military environment, or at least have some degree of service on active duty, or in a, I want to comment on this because I know this is something that you can give me some stronger feedback. But my father was a junior ROTC. My son was junior ROTC, and that was high school. So you have a civilian influence there. Who's in charge? I don't think the military is in charge of high school or college, junior ROTC. I think that maybe
in the teaching school system.
Yeah, I knew that there's some relationship with the military, but I'm not sure if military sexual trauma, and I would look at junior ROTC as being a sexual issue. Because who is responsible? Who's liable? The civilians or the military? That was the question that came in last night with the facilitators of the upcoming forum. But do you have any comments on that at all? Or
I do not want to alienate the reserve officer training corps community, but in my personal opinion, and due to my personal firsthand experience dealing with ROTC organizations, they are the equivalent of an overblown version of Boy and Girl Scouts of America that happens to wear green uniforms and know how to tie knots and to.
Thank you so much for your honest opinion. But let me ask you this further.
Oh, and they could also march the streets.
So do they graduate if they progress?
The officer training corps is an office, basically is an overflow. You know what? Guess what? Feel free, email me, Roxy. It is an overblown version of Boys and Girl Scouts of America. It is a candy-coated version. They learn how to march in a straight line. They learn how to salute. They learn how to hold the flag. And they memorize the Pledge of Allegiance. But when it comes to dealing with real issues, from a combat environment and frame of mind, they're completely inept, ill-equipped, and otherwise put it to follow any of said teachings into a real-world situation. It is, because it's called Reserve Officer Training Corps for a reason. Because you can do all that through high school if you want to, and that means you may get a scholarship. You get your scholarship, and guess what? That means you may be a reserve officer. That does not mean you know what you are doing. That means that you are dead nabbit sitting up here on the short list to jump on the tarmac and go to someplace like Afghanistan, Yemen, or Iraq.
Now,
you are not equipped to do anything.
But can you comment on active duty training?
Active duty training is apples to oranges compared to ROTC.
Well, that was the various terms shared with me last night. At this forum, I can't imagine. I said, first of all, my concern and my advocacy and my interest has been women veterans. But the issue that we were talking about in comparison is MST, military sexual trauma. There is data being gathered by the Department of Defense, according to this individual, on women or young ladies who are serving in these ROTC programs, or junior ROTC programs, that are sexual assaulted. I said, what does that have to do with the military?
That is the equivalent of, excuse me, in my opinion, ROTC candidates, people going through ROTC school, you should not be addressing them and trying to lump them into the case of military sexual abuse, trauma, or education training. It should be addressed in the form called bullying in high school, because that is what it is. They're being bullied. Someone stuck me in my wall locker. It's not an issue of you being on or sitting in a pup tent and your company commander wants to take advantage of you, or he will make your life miserable if you refuse.
Wow, that was an eye-opener. The one thing I think I almost hit on that may have been accurate was that these terms like military, sexual trauma, what exactly it is, because these are being legally defined now. The term rape has been legally defined within the last couple of months. So we have to revisit what definition that we're giving in the military that we're not trying to translate into some civilian reality. You know what I mean? And I don't see it. I said, why would I want my child who is ROTC to be considered military if they said, but ROTC actually gets a paycheck. So, but they did not have the option to have a military sexual trauma, in my opinion.
Reserve trainers, reserve officer trainees, they can quit and go back home to mom.
Absolutely.
We are across the border. We are in an environment where we swim back home to the land of the gods. We cannot cut class more. So you cannot tell me, you cannot compare anything that you teach in ROTC to what happens in the military.
In simple terms. You know, and I was asked by this individual to get some data or get information. You know, whatever it is, I said, whatever it is, it needs to be challenged. We cannot have every civilian complaint, translated into military anything, because it's first of all, the military is already overwhelmed with dealing with the military. But the one thing I said that's probably enticing some of this dialogue is any compensatory damages that may be received as a result. I could get a classification as military and I'm sexual assaulted. What's to stop me from saying if I get the classification that I'm sexual assaulted and I never have, which is one of the biggest issues with women who are really sexual assaulted, because so many people use their prowess to gain favor and to advance their careers. So when you're talking about military sexual trauma and you're talking about military sexual assault, it doesn't take a whole lot for somebody to fabricate if you can get $200, $300, because now my understanding is if you're in a military environment and you come back from that environment and you go to the VA, all you have to do is say that you were sexually assaulted. You don't even need proof of it. So may I get your...
Excuse me, Kathy. I really do apologize if I just sound a little bit vehement right now. But one thing that I'm going to discuss is exactly that statement, because I'm going to let the general listening audience understand something specifically. I am a survivor. I'm a survivor of the First Gulf War. I'm a survivor of the Children's Storm. I'm a survivor of military sexual assault. I was fucking gang raped repeatedly because I would not service my company commander. That is military sexual trauma. Now, for someone to all of a sudden want to jump on the bandwagon and say
they deserve military disability compensation because so-and-so touched my butt. I have an issue with it. You demean the entire core of what had happened to us. It is not because someone looked at you and made a smooch, smoochy, kissy, kissy move. We have been put in situations, literally, in a combat zone where we have been told when we try to report this type of degradation of our own soldiers, well, they missed their wives. I'm not your wife. Well, boys will be boys. I'm not one of your boys. Well, at least they did not do anything to the people, the locals. They did it to that makes it even worse. I'm the one next to them taking a bullet with them. You going to sit here and treat what my injuries are like I was supposed to enjoy it, like it was a compliment. And now for the faces, the powers that be, wherever you may claim that they come from, to sit here and attempt to put us in the same group of individuals that, oh, well, I just did not like the way he looked at me because so now I do not know what to do. So, you are FCC guidelines. No. What happened to us is true. What happened to us is relevant. What happened to us is valid. And what happened to us has lasted and carried over for our life. It affects our families. It affects my have children. It affects my nightmares, my relationships. It affects these things. So for anyone to sit here and attempt in some way, shape, or form to minimalize what happened to people like me or to exaggerate the equivalent of nothing happening to them aside from the fact that they broke a nail or a lipstick is a spit in the face of every
I'm going to ask you a final on another subject we talked about with this individual last night, which was I said that women veterans who were military sexual assaulted had been murdered. And he said, are you kidding me? How do you know that? How do I know that? Because they no longer And part of a Shadow Wavy movie talked about the center of this whole play is around a woman who was raped in the military and she was murdered. And the first story about how she died was that she shot herself. But it was incredible that how the – we have another woman veteran here on the scene. But we're doing a live radio broadcast right now.
Okay.
And we're welcome to have Laura Elam. She's one of our fellow associate female veterans from the area of Philadelphia down here at the Black History Showcase. And she's a photographer. And she loves doing her thing. And we actually had a little advertisement of her organization in our news month, and I hope she'll grab a copy.
Love it.
Well, would you like to just say a few words here? We're actually doing a live talk here.
Hi, my name is Laura Elam. I've been in the service for 27 years. Due to military, I've learned so much, not just leadership, but I also learned more about myself. I learned that in nations, you do have to contribute to your neighborhood, and you have to find your way, your own seed, to how to contribute. I'm here, down at the pension. Please come down. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Laura. Laura, I sent Laura a little Facebook note to get down here today. We are often running into each other on various forums and venues, and she's a wonderful photographer, and her work is being accessed and used newspapers in the city of Philadelphia, which again is one of those creative outlets that we use, again, with the drawing, photography for you, writing for me. We try to find some way to reform our thoughts. And I think that when we can, opportunities like our photography and with Louise with her writing for me, her writing and her drawing, but for me, it's my writing particularly. And I want to, well, while you're here, I'd like to talk to you about the play. If I could give you a notice, and maybe hopefully you'll make it. We were talking about the role of the chaplain in the military, Ms. Elam. And we were talking about the role of the chaplain and the importance of their accessibility for veterans who seek to relate to them in some kind of way with some level of trust and confidentiality.
Okay. And we spoke a little bit about that in our newsletter, and I'm going to make sure you get one before you leave. Are you coming, or are you going, or are you
doing? I just came in and decided to go next door to see the singers.
Would you mind stopping by to see us before you leave?
Yes, I will.
Okay, thank you so much.
I will. Laura. I will. Thank you so much. Yay. Go Army for me.
Okay. You're welcome, Laura. Laura is very outgoing, and you've just done a lot of things in the past. And these are things that come together. Over the years, our Brothers and Women Veterans have done so many different things, and I try to unite them. And I've developed some wonderful friends, women veterans. But one of the things that I learned yesterday just really startled me. I had a really, really good older woman veteran friend who called me on the radio a lot. And she came to the VA hospital when I was having some difficulties when I was really recovering. And I said recovering, that was before my eyes were open, and I was taking a lot of medicine from the VA. And I learned that she died. You know, and it was very, very disturbing to me because it seemed to me that every time I would go on to support from someone, when I look for them and they're no longer there, and the next time I hear about them, they're dead. And this, for me, I don't take lightly that women veterans, those women who were not allowed to come together over the years, purposely keeping us isolated, and that we would not have the network that we have now. That's why I really pressed in, but I've had numerous phone interferences. I've had to change my phone number several times, you know, for no reason. Just all kinds of electronic, my computer, my phone, and having to change my phone number. Even the television sometimes seems to be manipulated. If you have a cable service, you know, it's over-the-top control. This is America. And I just think that, you know, not to take the situation like that, but I kind of want to stay in the frame of where we are with this Black History Showcase. And for me, the conversation with the MST is going to be ongoing. We're going to Washington, D.C. on Wednesday. And, you know, we have to do what we have to do. It's so important that we stay. But there's something very diabolical about this whole thing for me. And when I was at the last couple of women's groups, I just saw the innocence of some of the women who are seeking help, trusting individuals. I think they could just really care less. You know, I think you want to say something, Mr. Brown. Please call me.
The crowd, more and more people come in and join the adventure. Your work is commendable, the hard work and the dedication that women veterans and at the same time educating men on the issues and how we can support you.
Well, thank you so much, Ms. Brown, for being in support. And I move forward and taking another level. Absolutely.
I would like to thank you, sir, because oftentimes, many is the perception that we must be hormones. We are exaggerated. Many men have been misinformed. They have been told that we either had enticed or garnered some type of unsavory behavior visited upon us, or we're exaggerating. And it is a rare man that honestly looks, because I have seen since he's working, since I have encountered abuse, and that's why I'm a women's veterans here. You have taken the time to see from both sides, because you have the ability to talk to the guy, and you also have the ability I'm going to say privilege of speaking to the women that are involved. And so you understand, for a fact, based on your empirical observations, that what they are telling you that the women like is not right. And it's a very rare thing to see a man stand up on our behalf. And for that, I commend you.
I was able to share just that the other day when I said, you know, I've been out here for many, many years, more than 10 years. Help me, help me. Take a seat, I'm hurting. Take a seat me over here. First of all, somebody just come and just help me out this mire that I'm in. Take a seat, I'm drowning. You know, and I finally was able to get to an office, a legislative office, political office, where I met, you know, this one person and that could understand and actually process it. Because I had talked to legislators. And what I realized, they weren't able to process it. They could not process the various dimensions that I was expressing in terms of I was a victim of military sexual trauma. I transitioned back to Philadelphia, my home of record, and trying to simplify it, they were not crossing as it, but, and they were minimizing it back to the smallest denominator. That's not my issue. Or, is that a federal issue? I don't know if you experienced that, but I hear humanity when people talk and we're relating and we're sympathetic with each other's emotional challenges. So it is my human responsibility for me to provide you the courtesy and the respect to dignify what you have to say with some level of sincerity and belief. At least I may not be able to help you right away, but for me, I am become like the answer seeker. And if there's an answer out there, I'm going to find it. And I think in this whole journey I've been on, now we can honestly say that there is healing in it, there is growth in it, there's a certain development of your character in it, you learn in it, you get stronger in it, and you survive. You survivor. I am a survivor. And we have yet to talk about what we feel. I know your pain. I feel your pain. I understand that whole dynamic. Our situation is different. I've not talked about it, but I don't talk about it for a reason because I keep it into a nice little jar with a nice little tight lid. And every now and then I might open the lid, but I don't open it up too much. That's my choice. I think that what happened was, and it was an unusual treatment for me when I was within the VA for the several years of medicine, they were trying to erase my memory. They were using the treatment methodology at that time. Erase your thoughts.
Get over. It was called get over. It wasn't that bad.
But it didn't go away for me.
You're alive. And that was the mentality. Mentality was, well, you and so just go ahead and get over it and move on because, and especially when it comes to women's military sexual trauma issues, and if words is out what they did to you, think about your reputation. You won't get a date for the prom.
Well, I've never been worried about a date for the prom, and I certainly have been worried about my reputation.
No, but that's one of the things they did when I first came out of the military.
Yeah, because
they wanted you to think
if you're green,
people would sit there and think something badly about you when you are the victim.
Well, listen, the whole thing I'm learning is that it's tiers. Your level of knowledge, they assess what your level of
they
knowledge
is. They try to embarrass you. They try to guilt you into silence or submission. That is what they have
to and do. That's why they keep you dumbing down. That's why the innocence of those young ladies who were at the VA and one soul. You know, a couple of those young ladies, I'm saying, you know nothing, young lady.
And you know what? They were also told, well, you know what? You brought it on yourself because of your innocence. I've heard that as well.
The challenge that I had with the gentleman last night that's preparing for this poem coming up, and what I learned from you, the impact of this, when the perpetrators are still in these situations, there is no recourse. They're still there. But what's even more, is that these are people. They would be behaving the same way if they were civilians.
If they had been with the military, they'd probably be doing the same thing.
I think the military is supporting and they are covering, what do you call it?
It's called the same thing that the VA, healthcare. We take care of our own, they are taking care of their own. A lot of them make the steps on top of that. That's the same thing
with Cassidy's
watch that movie. They are their own. In other words, they would rather have no breasts that have something good come of this. That is the problem. That is the problem. Because, see, some things are just not done. But instead of acknowledging the fact that it needs to be addressed, what they try to do is rearrange the problem. They try to deflect the problem. And we as an organization, we must be vigilant on our guard. Because what often happens, I'll give you an example specifically. When I was in during the war, we had an incident where, I'm not going to get too much details, but certain obvious constraints, I had a shower point, which was separate and apart because of my job of patient econ. I had hot water all the time.
And I made a point to have this shower point set up just for women because they were getting harassed at the other shower points because he had a lot of men coming in and out there. It was an aid station. In this particular incident, a female soldier was being gang raped in said shower point. I went to said shower point and I got her out of there. Pretty much me and a couple of friends of mine, whose names I shall not reveal for specific possible criminal repercussions, we got her up there. We took her and we treated her and we basically got her back. Meanwhile, my assistant, she was determined to write up said allegation and send it to jail. She wanted to call the military police. She wanted to call the military intelligence. And I informed her that's not a good idea because we're so far away from the authorities that we might not make it back there to deliver it. She persisted and she wrote without my knowledge and submitted it through the chain of command. The next day, she was accidentally shot. She was accidentally shot. I say again, she was accidentally shot by her platoon sergeant.
That was it. Okay.
And the comment was,
we're live broadcast.
Writing us up.
We're doing a live radio broadcast right now. No, 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 please, it's okay.
That's exactly what happened.
It's your name. It's all right. It's okay.
She shot off of her right hand. And then she's right up the face of her.
Off of it with like a Super Bowl ring.
She was treated because it did not hit any.
We all women better than we are. They're not going
to
do it. Because they talk about something that's going on right here.
They try to court
okay,
for her because she's not clear
and,
her full sergeant's
weapon. Card?
But he's the one that gave her the weapon muzzle first. He gave her 9mm and he pulled the trigger because she wrote up people that raped another female sergeant. This is how the military tends to take care of their own experience.
Wonderful, wonderful.
These are things that need to be addressed. First Cal,
wonderful, wonderful.
I pray one day I meet my chaplain.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm sorry, but we also have Antonia Bass, one of our women veterans. She's a Navy veteran. Antonia, would you just say hello, and we welcome you here. We're actually doing a live radio broadcast here today, and we've been talking about various subjects. We're just talking about military sexual trauma because I was having a discussion last night with somebody that's planning a forum on returning military from Iraq and Afghanistan. And military sexual trauma being one of the biggest issues. And they want to know how does that factor into junior ROTC and ROTC program. So we kind of got off track. And so we talked with some of our own areas of experience when we were talking about military sexual trauma. And she was just sharing with us about some various situations that she had gone through. I think this particular moment was about this other woman from being gang raped in one of the environments that she was in combat. Would you like to talk just a little bit? Would you just say hello to our audience? Because we're archiving this on our program. And we make this program play this again tomorrow, just for tomorrow's program. And tomorrow, how are we going to do? Because it's very a lot of good information has been on here today. Is there anything that you'd like to share with our audience today?
Yes. Hi. How are you, Kathy? And how are you?
Hi, Antonio.
And they are very two beautiful women who represent the military armed forces. All together very well, and I really appreciate their support in thwarting off bad things that come from even so-called our friendly side. But nevertheless, it's not going to forsaken. We're not going to forsake loving our country and loving the people who do represent it well. And I have to admit, I take my hat off to Lee for undergoing that particular piece, and I'm quite sure there's other things on the table she could share with you. Women veterans, some of us are sort of fortunate that we've gotten through most of it without having to be prejudiced, and unfortunately, some of us receiving a bunch of physical altercations that no one else would ever be able to endure. You would expect from, as what they call, enemy sides, but no, even within our own country, we have bad people. Thank God we do have good people. And when we do have the bad people, our God forgive them. They should be ashamed of themselves for trying to misrepresent what they're really in the military for. because there are so many of us and those who are behind us in age who would love to continue what our country stands for, and we don't deserve some of the things that come our way when it comes to those issues that we have capitalized on. And I admire them even more than I admire myself, even though I've done my 8 years. And I tell you, I didn't do anything special. I just served my country just like the next person who was blowing stuff out there. I've heard little things, but coming back to Philadelphia for some years now, I've heard even more than I ever have, because it's a much larger community here than it was down south where I've lived for some years. Thank you very much, Kathy.
So let me just comment on this. We were talking about how we are able to express ourselves artistically, most of us, just to translate some of our thoughts into some real way that we can relax, or whatever that expression means to you. We had Laura Elam, who was here. She's a photographer. I do writing a lot, you know. I know that you're singing. Would you talk about your singing? I like to bring out those things. You know, when I met Antonia, we were both in a different place. And we've been able to bring out so many things. When she did our fashion show last year, it was like, I mean, I still think about it. The professionalism, the beauty, all of the great pieces. Are we going to do it this year?
Yes, we are.
Are we going to do it this
year? And you have it documented here on this particular radio talk show. So it seems like I'm committed now. And Kathy has been a very supportive person on bringing together women without having an ulterior motive. And I have to admit, it was none of his doing. She made such an issue out of the fact that I modeled some magazine years ago. I said, for my woman veterans, this is a freebie.
Yes. So
does this mean I get to share my combat?
And yes, we will even have a segment, because Louise is very instrumental in advocating for women's veterans also, to do a piece where combat boots with a particular outfit.
What about my Timberlands? What about my Timberlands?
We'll just have to have a casual piece, a splash military piece, just for that reason. You can tell she is very
interested. What was interesting about this, I was on Facebook and I read a wonderful national designer. He's probably international, but he said, I would be glad to come. He wanted to make me a dress. This was like 2 days before or something. And I said, no. He said, I want to make you a beautiful coat dress. I want to make you gorgeous. Mr. Ron Wilkes. You know, he came in, but he's a national designer, and he's got some beautiful designs. And he came into the program we were setting up that day before the event with the models. He came in, so he said, I got to go, but I'm leaving my model, which is Michael. And he left them with some outfits, and they showed me how to do it on the cue card. And I had to learn the hard way. I had never done it before, and I got it monitored a couple of times to miss my timing to call in. But I learned I will get it right. I had to do that this time because it was a good experience. MC didn't show up. I had to do the MC, and they said I talked way too much. But it was okay because I needed that for me. It was just an opportunity because you have to know. I mean, we were there for like 6 hours, but we had a dip. We had some great people there, but I was the MC because the MC didn't show up. And it was very, very unusual because she did our first event. Mary, I hope she comes back this year, but she actually had a stroke. I'm going to keep people in prayer because people are going through. We talked a little bit earlier about how sometimes we have to push through to our other veterans because they want to keep us isolated. You know, they do want to keep us isolated. So I'll come knocking. I'll come, Antonia. You know, and we have other women veterans that I've known over the years. I will come knocking, but there are women veterans I met 1 year, and the next year I go for them, and they're not there. Shirley Pinesett was a beautiful young girl, beautiful. And I actually met her at Smith's where I meet a lot of the young ladies. And I went to call her for the next event, and she was beautiful. I mean, she was working in her own place. I mean, it was just about shocking. She had a stroke. You know what I'm saying? I refuse to have a die. at the hands of the VA hospital. I refuse. I fight.
My whole thing is this. My health care takes very seriously, and I'm going to address the issue of health care. And the one thing that we need to do, we need to talk about the people out of what you're going through. You too. There's something wrong with that. We need to talk.
Yeah.
But Antonia, she sings herself happy. We're going to go support her. She likes karaoke.
Okay.
And you know, but I know the different habits. I got one sister, she likes to go shopping. She loves shoes. You know, she goes shopping for shoes a lot. You know, are you Lauren?
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of different sisters, and one sister that makes the basket, she loves to make little creative things with her hands. We bring all these talents together, and it's so beautiful, you know. My heart just goes out because I'm not going to stop calling y'all. Because me and the one of us, we're doing it to hip.
Yeah.
So where you going? You better give me your mama phone number and your daddy phone number.
I want the Facebook. I want the Google.
I want everybody's phone. When I call another woman veteran,
it's called connection.
You've been on the phone for hours, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the other sister was singing down. She was down here a couple weeks ago in a contest. She didn't win, but I loved her enthusiasm. She said, I'm going to win. They had like a two rounds before they named the competition winner. She actually won the first round. So I said, honey, don't look at you lost anything. Everybody down here are winners.
You know, I'm really impressed about Kathy's enthusiasm as well. She should stop underrating herself. And I'm going to tell you also, speaking of Kathy, I have to admit, driving forces that do help in the bonding of women veterans. And I tell you, if it weren't for her, there would be a lot of forlorn and lost black women, white women, Puerto Rican women. And we're supposed to be veterans first. And we fall for the category, God's children first. Nevertheless, she's also a lovely person. And she brags about my scene, but I don't tell her everything because I don't want her to think I'm a bragger. Yes, I had some major church choirs 1 year ago before I went to the service and following the service and one choir line song. And, well, I had to laugh with my karaoke piece. I could sing anything from Ave Maria to Patti LaBelle to Beyonce. You name it, I got it. And I can throw the man's tune from time to time, like working with the women's world. Well, it's by Maxwell. I give it to you like that. And I tell you what.
You're not singing people's right now, do you?
Well, if you don't mind, no, thank you.
Okay, well, we're going to get that. Well, we're going to get you to sing
it
because it's not the time. Everything is not
thank
time and place. I respect that. I'm always about, look, there's a platform. There's no restrictions. You know, I have come to this point. I think I started over 50 when I turned 50. That you live once.
Yeah.
You live once. And we thank God every morning when we wake up, we're able to do what we just want to raise your hand for me. And we talked about the chaplaincy piece for a long time this morning. And it was about, you know, the event that we're having on May 12th. And so the chaplaincy piece, but for me, when I get up in the morning, I'm glad. Get up and stretch my aching bone, you know, and whatever else is ailing me, I'm grateful that I'm here because so many don't make it. And with the war and being so close to war and military people, we hear about this all the time. That was a young man that died in Philadelphia last week in Afghanistan.
Yes.
And I think his name was Jeffrey Coles. I'm not sure. But I'm going to do a resolution from the National Alliance Among the Veterans. So I do that when I hear about it. And a lot of times, I think we just don't support the families enough. You know, the one thing about it is we need to do more for military families locally. I'm not sure if President Obama or Joe Biden would have been exaggerated. I'm not sure. Maybe they know things that we don't know. And I have to listen to a little bit more into what their plan is and what their objective is. But for me, we just do things locally. We just celebrate our military that's local. And I don't think we do it enough.
can't be speak of being local, but I wouldn't be surprised. I noticed that President Obama last 2-3 weeks ago addressed the issue of PTSD. Kathy has been such an extreme advocate on that topic alone. I have a funny feeling that it reached from her mouth to up through other sources to the president's ears, and that's a landmark. I'm going to give her credit for making sure the president basically, you know, just spearheaded type of institutions trying to create on behalf of that for veterans in general. And God bless her. That's all I got to say.
And Tony, I don't know if I deserve all those accolades because, you know, this is true. It's truly a mission. Colonel Al, you want to kind of say hi to us? We're doing a live radio broadcast right here, and if you can just speak right into our computer right here, people can hear me. Colonel Al is our, the father of the military for Philadelphians. He knows everything about what's going on here. Colonel Al, come on, what color is your
hair? But I'm getting old.
Colonel Al is a triple nickel today. Colonel Al is a triple nickel today, and he has several different reenactments that he graces us with. Colonel L, this is our live radio broadcast of Women Veterans. We are doing a special broadcast here at the Black History Showcase here at the Philadelphia Convention Center, and right now we have with us Colonel L. And I'd like to just have you say a few words.
Oh, thank you very much. First of all, I'd like to give my call out to all of the queens in the universe and the mothers of the king. You know the sisters always come first. All right, and that is Eel, Albert Eel. So what I'm representing today, actually, I'm with my 3rd Regiment, the United States Colored Troops. We're the ones that was formed back in 1863. Some of our own Philadelphia history that a lot of people miss, because we raised over 11,000 at Camp Wham Pennon, right up there in Shelton Woods, which we call Sheltonham today. I'm also a member of the Triple Nickels. The Triple Nickels were your first African-American paratroopers who did serve, but they weren't sent overseas, because to be sent overseas, they would have to have been integrated into a regular division of paratroopers. And also to my right, we have our Tuskegee Airmen. I'm a member of the Tuskegee Airmen. I've been with them since the 70s. I also run a civil air patrol squadron. So this is normally with aviation. I'm not trying to push anybody into the military. You go the way you want to go. But learn aviation. If you want to go someplace, I know a lot of you ready to catch that airplane. And one of my young, there goes to the female, she flies for FedEx. And as a matter of fact, she's a captain. And she's one of my cadets. She graduated from Strawberry Ranch. So I'm hardcore.
Well, the question then, I'm in dialogue with an individual from New Jersey. They're planning to host a forum on when veterans come home. And we were in discussion last night about the ROTC and junior ROTC as it relates to many of the military who come home now with military sexual trauma.
Yeah.
Does that relate in any way to ROTC or junior ROTC program? Cadets? Are you familiar at all with any data or statistics that's coming from the Department of Defense?
The only thing that you would normally get when it comes down to the troops coming home, number one, a lot of times you don't even know they're coming in. Because if they was coming in and I knew about it, I'm with the DAV, Disabled Americans, VFW, and all the different veteran groups, to be here, to be ready to give them the information for which they need. And that's number one, register down at the VA hospital. Get your DD-214, your papers, have all the information you have, but you have to get down to the hospital.
So let me ask you a question, Colonel Ill. Are ROTC and junior ROTC considered military?
Let me see, how would I say that? Officially, junior ROTC? No, because you cannot draft no junior ROTC. ROTC in college, they're getting the money. So
okay.
When you join up and you're going ROTC, that's normally on the college level.
Do they have active duty training?
Yes.
Like
no, that's the ROTC, college.
Yes, college level.
High school.
Okay, like reserve, they are reserve officers training corps.
Yeah.
So they are being trained two going to officer training school, but then is there a commitment there?
Once you, I think it's what, the second year, I'm not too sure what year it is. But once you're committed, because now you're getting the finance from the military.
So, you know, Colonel, thank you so much for this time. You know, we've had several different encounters, but you see we're being invited to several different forums because I'm persevering in trying to create the presence for women veterans to come together. We need to continue to do that. You know, on May 12th, the VA has allowed us to have an event there at the VA hospital in the chapel called Women Veterans Pray. And we're going to be using these women, their artwork and their
and I
want to give you a little before you leave today, but certainly I have some more. But I'm glad that you're able to join us on our radio program. We're going to be broadcasting this all public on our program. There's normally held on tomorrow, but we're going to just use this program too and record it. Just record it, and we're going to put it for tomorrow's program so that people can hear us. So people can hear us. Excuse me. He is an artist. He does wood art, and it's a wonderful art. In that case, I'm sure he had some artwork. And we were talking here because one of the women veterans, yes, it is.
Can I say one thing about the women?
Yes, it is.
One of the things about the women veterans, you have thousands of women coming home, and somehow people just overlook the women, and you normally just see the men.
You do it a lot with a women book.
And I've always said, if the women just stepped up, moved in, a lot of this stuff, they have to step up.
We have Isaac, what's your name?
Mayfield.
He's a wonderful artist. Are you a veteran?
No,
but he knows a lot about the history of veterans. And I was talking to him about doing a sculpture of some kind for a woman veteran to be talking to Richard Watson at the African American Museum. And maybe we can work together, collaborate. We are all women veterans here. And this is some of the artwork from one of our women veterans who were in combat. And we were talking about on our program about how sometimes we transfer our thoughts into other artistic ways for me, of expression. For me, I write, she sings, she writes and does wonderful artwork and tells stories of our experiences in ways I think that relieves us a lot of an emotional, you know what I mean? So I have something today you can show us.
Sure.
Because I really want to continue our dialogue because I think what's going to happen if we can get the funding to support this project. But I think it's a wonderful way to commemorate some of the...
I'm doing some cultural tributes, and I have others like Malcolm X, some of all the culture here, and Texas, what they're supposed to do.
Wouldn't it be wonderful to depict a woman veteran and to, you know... I just think it's a wonderful way of expression.
Remember, they're getting silver stars, bronze stars,
but
purple stars.
This is wood.
Yeah.
This is wood.
Yeah,
mahogany. And it's a beautiful piece. And you can do any size and anything. You can take them. So, you know, this is just.
Put it on the website.
I don't know. We got to talk about it. But I didn't want you to get away about you seeing it here.
Yeah,
we've been here for 2 days. We've been here for 2 days, and I didn't want to let you get away about seeing or communicate with me because the last time I was expecting to hear.
Yeah, and I had loved the car, but I got it now.
And but
I mean,
I
had a financial. I call myself Goodness. Call you and give me my information.
But these are the kind of things you want to continue to do for Philadelphia because.
Yeah.
As you well know, he fights for our exhibits at the VA hospital.
Yeah.
And it's big. Things are becoming a challenge now. When you're using ethnic based, you know what I mean?
But it should not be an issue of being ethnic. It should be an issue of being
soldiers.
It should be human
beings. But is it not a reality? That's an issue. He fights.
The problem is they want to pick and choose. They want to be in front and center.
Well, that's why.
In reality, we are the majority of the people that do these things.
But it depends on the sovereignty of who's making those decisions. And I believe that when we have fighting for us, we have to support him and his efforts to keep that display of women veterans as much as he changes it. But I love when he put a rose in there. You know, it gives us the presence you know, and part of that HR bill, HOA, HR 809, which we thought the Van Boogel wasn't thinking it was passed back in the 111th Congress, but we have to make sure that women veterans in particular have their recognition in the VA hospital. And that's what that HR bill 809 was to do, have a display in every VA hospital that listed the fundamental principles of how women veterans ought to be treated in every hospital with respect and dignity. Having served in the military, we're going to be doing a writing campaign and to make sure that they put that back on the table because they bamboozled us and pushed in Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So most people think that it passed, but it did not pass the Senate. So we would have to, as women veterans, make sure that we follow stations because they're pretty sick down there. We got to let them know. We got to let them know that we are. Sorry. We have to let them know that we are on top of these legislations because people find it hard to write legislation. It's a very complicated process to get legislation on the tables of our Congress people.
You just put one lecture in front of the other.
We're going
like
to keep pushing.
Congressman, get on the floor.
We're going to Washington on Wednesday, so we're going to be talking about that. And we're going to report that to you because most of my advocacy now is in Washington. We've been called to the table in Washington, and that's because of the fight. You know, and we stood strong on some issues, and they're calling us now to, they want to hear from us, to hear from Philadelphia. So we're going to be
in
Camden, too. So we're going to be going down on Wednesday, and we're going to be reporting back on.
State Representative for Vanessa Brown.
Well,
but she's with the Veterans Department.
What Veterans Department?
Well, looking
at but we look at legislators to legislate.
Right.
We don't look at legislators in terms of benefiting off of our existence. You understand what I'm saying? When you're in a proper position as a legislator, unless the power is being utilized to legislate policies that affect particularly healthcare or employment, particularly for veterans, then the roles kind of reverse. You know, they tend to pull more from us than we can get from them. You know, some people have become very astute on how to benefit from the veteran population.
Everybody,
but when you look at the legislators, they're in such a powerful position. What legislation can we get her to write about the influence that she can have over how the veterans administration treats veterans? The senior veterans are having a very difficult time been trying to get secure their belongings, their finances. They can help to identify some sort of security, I think, from the state level in the vote. You understand what I'm saying? But they've been smart enough to get into our arena, but we need to make sure that they are used for the purpose that they've been voted to do. They're elected officials, okay? So I tend to listen for those who gravitate towards us, but they're not really
mentioned about Philadelphia. Don't forget, we do have a book out, the Veterans Benefits for Pennsylvania.
Yes.
That's an individual book separate from the federal book.
Is that the one that's the law? It's the law. It talks about the law.
Many of the veterans have no idea.
And also, the state of New Jersey also has a New Jersey Veterans Guidelines. What you can do is you have to be a resident in the state of New Jersey. You have to contact Congressman Andrews. He used to be, as a matter of fact, he's still very deeply involved with the Veterans Affairs Committee down on the Beltway. Contact him. He has an office in Woodbury, New Jersey, and he also has an office down the course as well. Go ahead and contact him. Let him know that you're a veteran. Let him know that you're a family member of a veteran. And you'd like to have information about resources and or anything else regarding veterans legislation, regarding the military and their family, regarding benefits, and things of that nature. You'd be more than happy to assist you.
But you know what I
mean?
For the great state of New Jersey.
But you know what I learned? The advocacy doesn't stop. You can't get legislation passed and say, well, I'm going to sit down and rest. You have to stay on the the local elected officials and politicians to make sure that they're aware of the legislation that affects us.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, there's a lot of legislation already sitting on the book.
But
you know what I mean? But it's not being enforced.
If I may interject, one of the main things that we also do not do, we are derelict in our own duty. Because if they are our legislative officials, and we have voted them in the office, they are to be held accountable
what they claim they're going to do as opposed to what they refuse to. That means that it's up to our duty as citizens of this United States of America to, if you do have access to the internet, you find out who your congressman is. You find out who your senators are. You find out who is influencing the laws or legislation that's being made to or your petition.
I'm going
to
get an amen.
I'm
going to
get an amen on that.
We used to say all the time, God bless America. Shut up if you do not.
Right.
So you cannot sit here and mumble about you wish something would be fixed when you're paying the individual. You brought the individual into all their derelict duties. That's why I have no damn tolerance for anyone that's mumbling about a humble pie because you just don't want to put them in the oven.
But, you know, we have that kind of advocacy now that's going to Washington, and that's what they want to hear. They want to hear the passion. They want to hear the sincerity. But it came out of situations in the military now that's transferring now into something real. That can make a difference. Her stories, my stories, my stories.
You want it like this, or you want it like that?
What's so good about it? The sisters from what camp? First camp?
First camp.
Oh, God, you heard it out there, brother. She's from the first camp. Know that.
Yes, we are soldiers. We are soldiers.
Oh, my.
But we're having our table right now. We are still doing the side broadcast. And we're getting quite lively over here. I'm just glad on this today. We've been here for 2 days. Wonderful experience here at our table, sharing our information, just continuing to raise awareness and the level of consciousness for people who don't understand about women veterans when they come home, what we go through. You know, it is a passion and our network.
Because what you're saying, you know, when we talk about the women coming home, a lot of times when they come home, they don't say anything.
Nope.
They don't say a word, and you don't even know they're a veteran.
Nope.
So this is one reason why you're all brothers out there that have to jump on brothers to go down there and proclaim who you are and what you're supposed to get. So someone said, well, I did my... No. Go down there and get it.
Tell them what you did, how you did it, and what you...
Colonel L. has adapted somebody. I don't know who you're recruiting, but you have to start recruiting somebody, some of these younger folks. Because I'm going to tell you, the advocacy doesn't stop.
No.
The advocacy, now because every war has its own different level of advocacy, its own legislation, and it dies every time the administration comes in. You got to continue to keep it alive. You know, you got to continue to fight for it. So we got two troopers going down.
With the Iraq people coming back, they have to get up off of their backside. They're the ones that need to get up too now.
Well, you know, they have become so complacent because now everybody's at their beck and call. I think the one thing I did show General Sasaki when I met him was that why they received so much preference, because it's marked as post 911, and it's because it's easier to measure. Before post 911, you know, they didn't take any data on the military.
Very little.
They didn't take any data. They didn't collect any data on military before 911. So now, post 911, you talk about OEF, OIF. I said, but you have World War II veterans, Vietnam veterans, and probably 13 other wars. You have had 13 other wars who have advocated for benefits. Right, they have denied them. So OEF and OIF cannot be absorbing all of the resources now. You know, you have to have some fair distribution of the resources because you have people who are. I met a gentleman from the Korean War who have been fighting for some time. I don't know how many numbers he told me. But he was fighting for all these years in Delaware County, and he gave me his information. I said, the Korean War. I said, oh my God, what am I supposed to do with the Korean War issue? Because they're not listening to that. They have become so OIF, OEF. And these buzzwords, OEF, OIF, they get your attention. You know, if you say Afghanistan, the reaction. But if you talk about Korean War, the response is not as quick right now. So we have to keep the advocacy going. And I those World War II gentlemen who are still having
this. We used to have a saying when I worked in one place, which I'm not going to say their name because they might sue me. It said, if they die on hold, the light goes out. So it's called, you keep waiting. You keep waiting. Please hold.
And many do.
And they hold, but guess what? It's time to stop. Right. It's time to start hanging up and finding a direct phone number.
But that's what Colonel said. They have to start fighting because if the OEF and our were a million or more that went to between Afghanistan and Iraq, if they don't start fighting for themselves,
the funding is skewed.
But we have a crippled generation of military who don't know anything.
Mm-hmm.
They will not have any resources because they're not being taught
how to respond.
One more thing, for all of the veterans, I'm going back to the men. To get them on board, you know who has to push them? The women, their wives, their girlfriends, because those are the ones that really know the. A lot of men will say, well, I'm not really sick. Or when they go to the hospital and talk to a doctor, they don't want to complain that they just fell down the steps. So a lot of times, if you go to the hospital, you better take your girlfriend or take your wife, because she will tell the doctor what's going on.
Because denial is not just a river in Egypt.
There you go.
They say, I'm not that sick. Well, then why are you dead?
Just,
and they be looking
so
good. They look strong when they walk in.
I
don't know they hurt. I just wanted to say, my father was playing in the war that in here, he became within 3 minutes.
Thank you so much.
It wasn't until about 6 or 7 years.
Everything.
He
got thank you so much.
Great that he served, but he's also very, very ill.
I'm
trying to.
Okay, thank you so much.
Made me believe that war never was really meant to be engaged.
Thank you so much.
But
all right.
Because, you know, some of us go over and above and beyond the call of duty. You know, our lives were not only on the line back then, but the long-lasting effects of war have really put a lot of people into a situation will be considered prematurely with 1 foot in the grave. And as I mentioned, he suffered for quite a while, but at least, you know, he sees some justice, but it took too many years, which made me sort of examine my situation where I'm at this point as a veteran as well. And taking too many years of justice, I don't even want to, you know, share it because, you know, I do understand what a lot of other veterans are going through.
But we come together, though, right?
Yeah,
and it makes a difference when we support one another. Peer-to-peer support is the best support for us. And I'm so glad I got my sisters. I said, once I met them, we were going
to be
here.
I'm so glad to be here.
He's the father right here, so we're glad to have you here. So we're down to our final minutes of the program. Can I get you to just make a few final comments? Louise, please, because I really do appreciate her sharing. Yes, such the best knowledge. And she's the most recently discharged, and sometimes when we open up some of those times may evoke some emotions that you know we're not prepared to deal with. But she comes and she sacrifices for us. But if we get a really large audience, we're able to check the stats, and we get like maybe 25. Yeah, we're almost there. We got our 90 minute warning. So
thank you so very much, Captain. We appreciate it. Let everyone know in the area is following. It does not matter if what has happened to you cannot speak. There are people that came before you that know how hard it is. We are trying to be the groundbreakers. We are trying to be the movers and shakers to assist you and make the transition easier for you and what you do and what you go through. But if you stay there and you and what you need, you will not be served properly. These things must be addressed. You are not the only individual that wants to address. You have people before you, and you have people that's coming after you that will show you exactly what you need to do.
Go on, sister. First
half.
Wow.
So we're signing off until tomorrow, which we'll probably do this a recorded program again tomorrow so that our Monday listening audience can hear. And we'll be looking forward to you all joining us Monday. This is Kathy Santos, Special Alliance of Women Veterans here in Philadelphia at the Black History Showcase at the Philadelphia Convention Center. And I'd like to apologize to the Kaskiski Airmen and to Sergeant Lee, who I never got a chance to get over to talking to them because I really think y'all down on the 10 seconds and we out of here.
Wow,
please have a wonderful day. Thank you so much. All of our guests, thank you. Yeah.